next case is 97-628 Ohio, Michael Perry. Mr. Rico.
Morning. May it please the court, I'm Mr. President, Attorney Steve Rico, on behalf of the station president. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for the public.
I'm speaking of it.
The issue for the court today is quite complex and novel. Although it's a criminal matter, we rely heavily upon civil cases to support our proposition that an unauthorized use of property in another is not a criminal offense. The state contends that the First District Court of Appeals erred in deciding this case just because God incurred the defendant's case. First District Court opinion, while lengthy and informative, was incorrect. This case began with a percentage prosecution, investigation by the Helena County Sheriff's Department, and did not reveal any crime under the percentage laws, but it did reveal the fact that the defendant used software that he was not licensed to use.
But, Mr. Draco, I couldn't find in the record or in the brief any indication as to how the software came into the hands of the defendant. Do we know that, and isn't that a question that we need to know?
I can briefly address that. It is not in the record.
It's not in the record, then we're without it. I just wondered if I missed it someplace. But
no,
doesn't that help to come in? Don't we need to know that?
Just by way of background, the Sheriff's Department is conducting an investigation into the identity possibly being disseminated by law enforcement. They executed a search warrant, and that's how they uncovered all this software.
Well, that tells how the prosecutor got it, or the police got it, but I want to know how the defendant got it. We don't know that.
We don't know how he got it, I'm sorry.
But he could have legally purchased it,
sure.
Legally posted it, correct?
But we don't know, and that's important to know whether he purchased it, went down to CompuServe and purchased it. That's a different situation than if he got it through some subterfuge somehow, isn't it? Isn't that?
Well, he did admit in the record that he did unauthorize the use of the
Department. Isn't that really, he could have had purchased it himself, but isn't the crime itself and the way he used and the unauthorized use?
That's correct.
Okay, it seems to me that the Court of Appeals was stressing the fact that kept using the term copying, and
right.
That would be preempted. But
yes.
The unauthorized, is that the distinguishing feature, is the fact that the unauthorized use is not preempted, but copying?
That's exactly what we're arguing today. And that what is preempted is any right that's substantially equivalent to the rights enumerated under 17 U.S.C. Section 106. And that's the right to reproduce, prepare derivative works, distribute copies, perform publicly, and display publicly. Reproducing software. In order to use software, you have to copy it. You don't get the actual software. Someone who goes down to CompuServe and buys a software package, you're not buying software. What you're buying is a license to use the software. And you're limited to the use of that software by which, in terms of license agreement in that software.
That preemption legislation is pretty broad, isn't it?
It's broad.
The only thing they didn't put in there after copying is recopying or redistributing or something like you want, because they say copying.
They do say copying, but any cause of action that is not equivalent to copying is not granted in 17 U.S.C. Section 301, specifically points out the two-step process. One, you have to determine whether the subject matter that you're talking about falls within the realm of copyright. And both sides here can see that it does in software.
When I download from one computer to another, don't I copy?
Sorry.
When I download from one computer to another, don't I, by necessity, copy?
You are copying.
Okay, when I am looking at it in the computer and using it, have I not copied it, or am I not copying it by just even looking at it?
Yes, and there are cases that specifically talk about...
Isn't that preempted?
It's not preempted when you're using it and you have a license to use that software. You have a license to use the copy and other places within the copyright it copies into the memory, and you're actually running the memory that you have, because you are making copies while you're using it.
So explain to us
that's
unauthorized.
That's license use. I think it would help if I could explain the two primary different types of licenses that are involved. The first type of license that most of the big software companies will use, the license where they directly negotiate a contract with another corporation for the use of that license. Usually they'll get server license, you know, get seed licenses or site licenses for a certain number of users that are authorized to use that particular software within the terms of the licensing agreement. Now, in the case of National Environmental System versus Computer Associates International, it's a 1993 case at the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. Computer Associates entered into a license agreement with National Car to allow them to use software for their own internal uses. National Car went beyond the terms of that license and used that software in a manner inconsistent with the agreement. Computer Associates sued National Car Rental, and National Car Rental raised the issue of preemption. The court found that it was not preempted because it was simply on the terms of the license agreement, and you have breached a contract claim, that is not preempted. Focusing solely on the use of the software, the improper use, it doesn't matter how the contract.
Let's take it step by step. The court decides that there's a set of software, a software application that's really good, so the court purchases it for our clerk's office. I'm down there one day trying to figure out how to run down a particular file, and they hit the button and show me the software. I think, boy, that's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I go to the administrative director and I say, put that on my computer. Can he do that?
Well, it all depends on the terms of the license.
All right, the license agreement says that you purchase this one, because we've had to purchase separate applications for all our computers.
Right.
All right, now I'm just giving you the facts on this one. They can't put that on my computer lawfully, can they?
They can't put it on your computer lawfully unless they get permission from the software owner to allow...
And the license agreement says you use it for the purpose that you bought it, and that's in the clerk's office. Okay.
And if you do that, you actually are using that in an unauthorized manner. It doesn't matter what you make copies of. You broke the law, and you broke the license.
That's preempted. It's not preempted if it's proven that they took what was purchased for the clerk's office and put it on my computer. That's copying.
That's copying. If they want to come in under the federal law and claim that a copyright violation, they have to show that you made a certain number of copies that you made profit from that. There are other elements that have to be proven.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next step then.
But
so now they've done that, and I start using it. Maybe I even post it on a bulletin board. Haven't I copied the copy?
Yes, Sean, you have a copy.
Is that preempted?
That is not preempted because...
Now it's use.
The use of the software itself is not preempted. And if I can direct the court's attention to Computer Associates International versus Outside, the second certain case that's activity, they specifically say in that case that copyright protection does not extend to the software's functionality.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're talking about.
But I know it would be hard if you weren't.
So it does not extend to the functionality. You use that software, it would be on your copy. We're actually not using it to perform functions. And what's protected is the actual right itself and the copy itself, not the use of that software in a certain manner. And that's the distinction. It's very subtle, yet it's the basis of the whole claim here, and that's been the basis in other cases.
Is there an ability to criminally prosecute under the contract law, or did this run to a civil action?
The only way you can prosecute criminally is under Section 501. It has to go through the U.S. Attorney's Office. They would have to prosecute. There has to be a certain number of copies that were made illegally, and a certain number that were distributed illegally, and a certain dollar amount. They can't just come in and just prosecute.
Did this case disqualify?
This case, I believe, is a dollar amount. Might not have happened. And you would have to show that he made copies, a certain number of copies, and actually distributed them or introduced them in some manner. And that's not shown in this case.
So we find that if you take the defendant's position, there's going to be a threshold level upon which people can use and abuse copyright and never get prosecuted.
That's correct. It happens all the time. contract claims and its appropriation and conversion.
Is there a civil action pending in this motion?
There is not a civil action pending.
Counsel, going to a procedural matter, the defendant makes the point that this came to the, this arose on a motion to dismiss, and that the arguments that are being made here now were not, were really not put forth by the state, but rather were, as they suggest, filled in by Microsoft as amicus, and making this distinction that authorized use is not a preempted by federal law and can be prosecuted under Ohio law. What do you say to that?
The motion to dismiss was presented, and the trial court basically decided that it was not presented, so it was summarily dismissed, and this went straight to the plea. And the plea hearing, the judge didn't find that there was any theft of the property. And I think because he put that, they also talked about the record, it's very brief, mental gymnastics involved, and even state conceded to some point that it would be very difficult to prove theft. And then the criminal tools chart is also so there wasn't a lot of discussion.
What about at the Court of Appeals? Was this the arguments only made by Microsoft at the Court of Appeals, this distinction with unauthorized use?
The Microsoft's brief at the Court of Appeals was very helpful in the state's position in putting forth that argument of unauthorized use. We touched upon that in the oral argument, but did not focus on that specifically at the Court of Appeals. We focused primarily on the fact that the state bringing the cause of action and not the computer software company. But it was addressed at the oral argument.
You would say it's not waived by the state not having raised it. Amicus can make arguments. Should that be the rule?
I think that should be allowed.
In this case.
Do we know, did the defendant receive any fee or money for a bullet?
We don't know whether he received any type of monetary money.
There's at least one case that suggests that makes a difference, but we would argue it doesn't.
We don't know.
Use is use.
Files that others could access and download the software. I want to talk about the second type of license that being supported as it pertains to this case specifically. I talked about the corporate licensing agreements, but the shrink wrap licensing agreements that have been upheld in the case of ProCD versus Idaho, the Seventh Circuit case, in 1996. And that these shrink wrap licenses, when they come in the box, are valid licenses. Mr. Carey didn't have any type of license. He had to negotiate with the software company. He had to didn't purchase the software and abide by the software license that's included in the shrink wrap box with the license. He used the software to run his bulletin board. He used the software as a means to promote others to come to this bulletin board. And he operated the software on a system without a license. And it's this operation of use that is not preempted by the Federal Copyright Act. And I know that it's a very fine distinction, but it is one that applies here today. State cause of action is unauthorized use of property. Why should owners of intellectual property be afforded any less protection than owners of personal property? And the state legislature has stated in 2901.01810 that property includes computer software. Prosecutors do not state that the crime was unauthorized copying. I know we're in the record where the state talks about that this is a crime of copying. It's specifically stated in the record at page 2, page 18, there's discussions on licensed software. And we ask this course to reverse the first district court appeals.
My concern, Counselor, with this case is that, you know, the Court of Appeals opinion is relatively short and the argument's relatively short and the briefs are little. I think we got a major matter on our hands today, don't we?
I think it's very important for us.
I mean, isn't this the kind of thing that Microsoft and IBM and so many people, they would like to broaden their remedies so that they can, they don't have to charge into the U.S. District Court or through the FCC or somebody. They can come right to the local prosecutor and say, let's teach these people a lesson and we'll do it criminally. Isn't that what's going on?
I don't think so, but I think that anyone who has property should be able to license that property, be able to tell others what they can and cannot do with it.
And have a remedy for violation of the license.
And it's a violation under state law as well, under state federal law, for unauthorized use of property. That's what we're
doing. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
Mr. Clark. Thank you for being here on such
short notice. Mr. Perry, Chris Jones said she injured herself, so if there's some questions, I'm not sure if I apologize in advance, but I think I've got to give them the facts, and I think taking a positive view of what the state's, I think it's really a simple case, but it is extremely important. It's simple because it's fact sensitive. I think in this case, Court of Appeals, in his opinion, the plea of no contest and the facts were read at the time show that it's fact sensitive. The state goes to great lengths to show that use is the key thing. However, use of software, the way that it was alleged to have been used here and the conviction resulted, the essence of it is kind of
help at least pee out that it's really sketchy as to exactly what it is.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
What did he do? You said it's facts sensitive, facts specific.
What the record shows, I know it's a final record. In effect, this gentleman owned he was a system operator. The Court of Appeal refers to him as SIO, system operator of bulletin board system. There are big bulletin board systems. AOL is a big bulletin board system in a sense. There are small local ones. Any one of us could set one up if we had the equipment. What he allegedly did and was convicted of was taking the software of Microsoft, I think Clark Corporation, and using that to run a bulletin board system, and then placing the software that he had on the system for any subscriber to download to their system. So an example, and I don't go to the tier, but the concept that applied, Mr. Perry ran the bulletin board, he would put WordPerfect on his system, he would download it. Any of us as subscribers could then take WordPerfect from the bulletin board and load it into our hard drive and use WordPerfect.
Would you explain, because the key is the Criminal Act, the State Act, trying this unauthorized use, and preemption involves copying. I take it that you don't see a difference between unauthorized use and copying, or do you?
I think there are, this is again why I say it's fact sensitive. I can think of cases where you could use software without authorization and not copy. But in the sense that the Copyright Act prohibits copying, display, and distribution, in effect, on these facts, that's the essence of what he was convicted of. The prosecutor in the fact said he was exchanging and moving software. He was sharing computer software. That's the essence of what copyright protection is. I could give you a disc of a game. Minesweeper, it's on all of them. But maybe you don't have that on yours. I downloaded it on my computer and gave it to you. If you use that, you unauthorizedly use it, you don't have a license for it. Can I be then prosecuted for disseminating it, publishing it, distributing it under the federal copyright? No.
Under this case, though, counsel, it seems that the argument that is posed is goes to this the subject that it was misrepresenting the bulletin board. Misrepresented the that Microsoft was standing behind this software that folks could download, and that it was a passing off of its legitimacy, which would infringe on the whole reputation and I guess that's it. Essentially, the reputation of anybody who's a provider of software, that they would say, you know, there's a, and what we have to have is an extra element to get beyond preemption, and it's the that's the argument that's suggested to us that it was this really this sort of usurping of the corporate name, usurping of the corporate goodwill that went with the copying. There was copying, but the unauthorized use element comes from that whole business of usurping the name and the goodwill and the reputation of the provider, who normally sends it out with its own shrink wrap and the license, and everybody knows that they're going to stand behind it.
As you just said, Your Honor, everybody knows you get that licensing agreement. The concept of a shrink wrap licensing agreement doesn't appear anywhere at the trial level. And I admit I'm not intimately familiar with this case, so I said we would like to be. From what I can tell from the day I had to review it, the first time shrink wrap appears is in the paperwork filed with this court, and it's argued at the Court of Appeals in Microsoft Amicus Brief. Microsoft, in answer, and I apologize, because there was someone who wrote it. Amicus should not be allowed to make.
Well, before we get into it and follow up on Justice Cook's comments, that really is the distinguishing factor. Microsoft's trademark was being passed on, so that's unauthorized use of Microsoft's trademark. Now, copying would have been to copy Microsoft's program and passing it on. That then, I could see, would be a violation of copyright law and be preemption. But what we have here is the use of Microsoft's trademark, which is unauthorized.
From my limited knowledge of the record, I don't know that that is in fact in the record that is what happened. From my understanding of the facts, what is convicted, which goes back, I think, to Justice Cook's question, I'm not sure that there was that pawning off or misrepresentation of Microsoft's trademark or any company's trademark. I don't know. I can't find it in the record. I would agree in a situation where I'm running a bulletin board.
Well, I guess it was stipulated. I mean, we have to be, surely there was at the base level of this case, whether it was preempted or not, there was the evidence that this was Microsoft software downloading to users from the bulletin board.
From the record we have.
We don't know
that?
Okay.
What we have is an allegation that Microsoft named it, that this software was placed on the bulletin board. And Mr. Harrison was not guilty on the theft. There was not enough evidence to show that he misappropriated that software.
Right.
There's no...
But what he was transmitting over the computer is in evidence, isn't it?
From the limited record, I don't think so, because it was a flip. There was a hearing on the motion to dismiss, as Mr. Rakoff said, basically summarily overruled by the trial judge. They immediately entered no contest plea. Reading between the lines, I know the trial judge, I think that he had agreed upon.
Don't get it.
And it's not in the record.
Counsel, I knew you would have to
information association.
Which short course here, I suppose my colleagues in conference will provide that. But bulletin boards are what, as opposed to home pages or I guess you send it on so you have used it, but substantially you can talk to me about doing this. You can set up something where a product or something that you have is on the internet for other people to see. For example, is that a bulletin board concept? Or
the way I try to explain it, I think that in the Court of Appeal decision, they try to explain it somewhat. A bulletin board is what you're committed to on the homepage. I have a vinyl siding company. I want to sell vinyl siding. I go on the internet with what's called a homepage.
That's not bulletin board.
What a bulletin board would be is you have an interest in the Civil War. And you log on to the internet, you type in Civil War. Maybe there's a bulletin board run by somebody in Newark, Ohio. That's Civil War buff. You type that website, civilwar.newark. You go there, there's a place for historical sites in Ohio, historical documents, Williams County shown in the first place. And then there's a place where you can post messages to other people. It's more interactive type of situation.
My question is, because everybody senses that this case could be broad or not broad in terms of what we're doing, is it possible to set up without having to go to Microsoft or some other company and get a license to do that? In other words, can you go into the store, buy and pay for the necessary software that enables you to set up your computer, construct a bulletin board, put it up out there without violating any copyright laws or any state laws. Is it possible to do that?
My understanding is that's very easy to do. Even a step beyond that, people who are extremely computer literate can write their own software. There are programs, I think it's called Java, there's one, there's some others, where if you have the technical know-how, you can actually write the program to do what you want it to do. And the question then becomes, once you properly set up your bulletin board, what do you do with it?
Okay, that's not what your client did.
No. I do not know, to answer one of the court's earlier questions, I do not know how he got the software. I can't find that. To be honest with you, getting ready for this, I did not look for that.
Should we be concerned about that? There was one I forget which one it was, it seemed to indicate that might make a difference.
Given the relative lack of the record we have, the finding of not guilty on the death defense, on these facts, I don't think it's something that there's bigger issues, and I don't think that that's really something that should be considered. We don't have enough to honestly and legitimately consider the full understanding of I think the central essence of what happened on these facts is the software was on the bulletin board, and it had been copied and put it there. The state makes tries to make a distinction between use and copy, use and distribution, and use and display. Copying, distribution, display are the acts that are preempted. If at the Court of Appeals level, the state urged that the adoption of the extra element test by the court be made, so that if the state crime, the state statute mirrors or by committing that offense, you would then have a copyright violation. In order to escape preemption, if there's a qualitative difference in that state act, it's not preempted. But I think if you look at the authority that's cited, I believe it's TANDES, it's TANDES, that talks about the TRANDES, TRANDES, it's a two-part test. If you have a state cause of action that also gives you a federal copyright violation, such as copy, you have to then go beyond that to avoid preemption. On these facts, we don't have that. We didn't go beyond copy. We didn't go beyond distribution. We didn't go beyond, I think, display by putting it on the bulletin board.
And the no contest plea, when the prosecutor submitted his or her recitation of what happened, it seemed to me they were very careful not to use the word copying. Do you find the word copying in there any place?
You don't find the word copying in there any place. But what you do say, and while he was so concerned for copying, he did use the word distribution.
Yeah.
And I think it's the third paragraph, and I'm reading from the Court of Appeals decision. The software of the Fourth County indictment was the software that actually led the poll to work. So he was not only distributing that, but he was also using it to facilitate the distribution of other items. He was distributing. I mean, the prosecutor concedes that. So distribution is also one of the protected rights of the copyright provision that would again preempt it.
Isn't the whole purpose behind the copyright law to protect the goodwill, to protect the trademark, to protect the income of the person that invented the product? And the whole purpose of the Copyright Act is to protect that issue.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. And I think that is also why the copyright code and the law says it's we don't want any boring lines. We want it very clear.
If you try to say you use the copyright, you use the copyright, it's the same thing you're trying to protect.
I'm not sure you understand the question.
Well, there are some questions about whether because you used it, it's distinctive and you're evading your evading your trademark and that sort of thing. That's the whole purpose of the copyright law, is to protect that trademark.
That's true to protect the trademark, but in this case, we have no allegations that there was a trademark involved, a service mark, any type of distinctive mark that would let somebody know this is Microsoft, it's being presented with the inherent authority of Microsoft, you come with all the technical support of Microsoft, the service, there's nothing in the record that says that. The prosecutor says he was exchanging and moving computer software of various kinds of types. He was sharing it, and he doesn't say copying. But he basically defines it without using the word. And he takes, as Justice Douglas pointed out, great pains to avoid that word. But that's still the effect, and that's why I say I think it's fact sensitive. It's going to be case specific. I think one of the things that the court is going to have to determine is, do you want to adopt the extra element test? On these facts, I don't think you have to get that far.
The prosecutor. The prosecutor says, were used by this individual beyond the scope of express or implied consent of the persons competent to give it. And then, that he was exchanging and moving computer software of various kinds and types, including Microsoft software, that was alluded to in the second count of the indictment. So he was not only distributing that, but he was also using it to facilitate the distribution. Can't both happen?
Can't both what happen?
Both copying slash distributing, and thereby using?
I think, yes.
Isn't the correct?
He can't use the software the way he used it. He used it by copying it and by distributing it, if that answers your question, if I understand it correctly.
Well,
on these facts, that's what happened, both happened.
We strictly construe preemption, both expressed and implied. Couldn't the preemption statute have just as easily said copy, comma, use?
I think at the time the preemption statute was written, and when you look at the legislative history of the site, I think it was Jones cited in the brief, and the first district talks about some. They went into some detail. They talked about other things such as trademark infringement and other things. And I think they purposely left it open so that it would be a wide range of protection. And I think when you look at the history, you will see that by not narrowing it, they wanted that broad overall protection for the rights of the trademark owners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Second, Clark. Mr. Rakoff, you've used your time for 30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.